All right. You know what? It's good to see you all out there. And if you ever needed proof that you're Baptist, just look at where everyone's sitting. See, you somehow find a way to still fill back rows, even when there's no rows at all, right? Isn't that kind of funny? We are glad that you are here, and we are excited about our regathering, kind of progressing along, and we're glad that you chose to be here this morning. But we are going to continue on with this series that we've been doing, that we've been calling Life, God, and Other Small Topics. And the purpose behind this series is basically coming out of two verses. And the first one that I want to talk about is actually in Proverbs 18:17. We want to remind you of these again. Proverbs 18:17 says this. It says, "The first to state his case seems right until another comes and cross-examines him." Now, I want you to think about what that means. You hear something and you go, "Hey, that makes a whole lot of sense," but then you begin to think it through, you begin to look at the reasons behind it, and you kind of go, wait, maybe that's not the best explanation. And when it comes to life, God, and other small topics, it's important that we think things through. Why is that important? Because of this other verse in Proverbs 4:23, it's trying to teach you how to guard your heart. How to protect yourself, how to look at those questions about those big issues like life, God, and other small topics and come to rational conclusions. But before we get into it today, it's back. Favorite memes, favorite things this week. Are you ready? Some of you, you're laughing and you're excited. And this, so there's a few of those we want to show today, just five today. The first one is simply for y'all here, because this is the difference between church online and church together, right? So you have plain water, but then you have fancy water. You know, that's the difference between church online and then church together. But you know, we've had a week of protesting, and I'm not trying to make light of protesting whatsoever. Please understand that by this next little meme. It's just too funny not to share. But there were protesters at Church's Chicken. Just a bunch of chickens in front of Church's Chicken. You know, you almost want to tell those chickens, "Are y'all crazy? Move out! They eat you here! Go away!" It's kind of funny. But with all the crazy week we've kind of had, this next meme just made me laugh. This is Canada watching the U.S. news. Yeah, that one kind of made me laugh. It's been a fascinating week to watch the news, right? And with the way 2020's going, and we had some rain this week, and we've had a lot of rain, praise God for that, but this meme really struck a chord with me because it says this: "Sounds like thunder outside, but with the way 2020 is going, it could be Godzilla." So there you go. That's pretty good. And this very last one is for you right here in the room today, because you're finally back here in church, and so this last meme is for y'all. Here it is. Are you ready? Here it is. It says, you know, when you finally get back to church and someone tries to hug you. Don't think I haven't been watching y'all, giving those side things to the huggers. You're kind of going, are they coming near us? Should we pant? Do I need to strike up a conversation so they won't come and hug me? Right. That's, be there. Yeah. But I do want to continue on with this series of Life, God, and Other Small Topics. And I want to introduce you to a guy this guy was a fascinating guy. He passed away about 10 years ago. A guy named Anthony Flew. Anthony Flew was kind of one of those foremost atheists of his day. In his career, he actually taught at the University of Oxford, the University of Aberdeen, and at the University of Kiel of Reading. As you can tell, he's British and did a lot of things over there in England. He taught at York University in Toronto as well. And this guy was like one of the foremost atheists of his day. He submitted papers on atheism to C.S. Lewis. He debated bigwig people like William Lane Craig, and he's there representing the atheist side. And this guy, Anthony Flew, shocked the world in 2004 when he came out with this idea. There's a book that he published explaining all of this. We'll put the book cover on here so you can see it. Notice it says, "There is no God," and "no" is crossed out, and it says "a." He wrote a book that says, "There is a God, how the world's most notorious atheist changed his mind." Now, this guy had spent his entire life and his entire career teaching philosophy and trying to encourage people not to believe in God. And in 2004, he's at a symposium in May 2004, and he gets asked the question, he said, about some of his recent work about the origins of life, and he gets asked the question about if he thinks that this points to an intelligence behind creation. And his response to this May 2004 shocked everybody because he said, yes, I now think it does, almost entirely because of DNA investigations. But some more of what he said, we'll put the quote up here. He said, what I think the DNA material has done is that it is shown by an almost unbelievable complexity of the arrangements which are needed to produce life, that intelligence must have been involved in getting these extraordinary diverse elements to work together. It is all a matter of the enormous complexity by which the results were achieved, which looked to me the work of intelligence. So he actually has people throughout 2004 that are going, he didn't actually mean that. He's old. He's getting elderly and he's just losing his mind, or he didn't. So in 2007, he actually writes the book that you see there. There Is a God, How the World's Most Notorious Atheist Changed His Mind. Did you catch what it was that had him go, okay, I do believe that there's a God. Now, I'm going to tell you, I don't think Anthony Flew ever went far enough. I don't think he ever came to truly believe in Jesus, that Jesus died on a cross for their sins. He just began to look at all of the creation, specifically DNA, and said, hey, there's got to be a designer behind it. There's got to be a God who's done this. But he never really reached the point of coming to Christianity, if that makes sense. He tended to follow the deist view. He said that God created everything and then just left it alone and kind of was done with it, kind of wiped his hands of it. That's very different than what we see in Psalm 104. And I love Psalm 104. We're not going to take time to read the entire thing today, but I hope that sometime in the next few days, you will sit down and read Psalm 104, because Psalm 104 is talking about the very things that caused Anthony Flew to go, hey, maybe there is something to this God thing. But verses 24 and 25 of Psalm 104 says this. It says, if I can find my little 24, there it is right there. How countless are your works, Lord. Then notice what the psalmist says. How countless are your works, Lord. In wisdom, you have made them all. The earth is full of your creatures. Here's the sea, vast and wide, teeming with creatures beyond number, living things both large and small. And I look at this and I kind of go, in God's wisdom, he made all of the creatures and he made you and me. He made life. He made everything. And I think about what that means. And I think about the complexity of DNA. And I think about what it was that caused Anthony Flew to go, hey, I do think there is a God. A guy that spent his entire life telling the world, arguing with the world that God didn't exist, goes, I think there is. And it's all about the complexity that he saw in the world around us. There's a guy named Francis Collins. Francis Collins is the one that's mapped the human genome. He wrote a book called The Language of Life, DNA and the Revolution of Personalized Medicine. And here's what he says in that. He says, bacteria have DNA. Think about that here for a minute. COVID-19 has DNA. Yeast has DNA. So do porcupines, peaches, and people. It's the universal language of all things. So here's what I want to talk about today. What is the big deal that Anthony Flew made about the complexity we find in DNA? What is it about that? And I wish we had time to properly deal with this topic. Y'all, we could be here for days. You'll be glad to know we're not going to be here for long, okay? So are you glad about that? You know? You want to know why we could be here a long time? You ever seen this? Someone tell me what this is. We'll put this up here on the screen. You recognize that? Right? DNA. Exactly. DNA is this double helix thing, and it's kind of spinning around, and you almost see that it looks like a ladder. You have a little rungs on the ladders there. The human genome, you and I, do you know how many of those little rungs we have in our DNA? 3.1 billion rungs of DNA that make up you. 3.1 billion rings that make up you in your DNA ladder. And we're going to talk about every one. No, I'm just kidding. We're really not. We're not going to talk about that at all. We're really not. But here's the thing that I want you to get. Anthony Flew was a guy that said, okay, it was just natural selection, it was just evolution, it was just those things that have created who I am. And he reaches a point and he goes, there's too much complexity for it just to be that. There has to be a guy who designed it. Here's the thing I want you to catch about evolution and about natural selection, right? Evolution and natural selection is about modifying what's already there. Picture this here for a minute. This is mutations. This is changing what's already there. It is changing the information that's already there, but it cannot create that information itself. And y'all, when I started this series, I planned on spending an entire week just on that, and you're getting it right there in that sentence. That's it, okay? Evolution can only change what's already there. It cannot create new information. What does this mean? When we talk about evolution, there's really technically two types of evolution. There's microevolution and there's macroevolution. Microevolution, let me give an example of that. Charles Darwin, the guy that formed the theory of evolution, one of his reasons why he believed in evolution was he saw the beaks of finches and how they changed over time, right? Sometimes they would be a little bit wider, or they'd get a little bit sharper, or they'd get a little bit longer, and the finches had different kinds of beaks. That's microevolution, changing within a specific species. You know what macroevolution is? You change from one species to another. There's lots of evidence of microevolution, but there is no evidence of macroevolution that we have found. That's why everyone's always searching for, quote, the missing link. Do you know why they call it the missing link? Because there is no link to the species change that you can find. And Anthony Flew begins to look at things like that, and he begins to go, okay, is there really truly a designer behind all of it? Because this world, this life is so complex. Could there really be a God who actually designed it? Now, William Dembski, I want to introduce you to him. He's a Christian. He was a mathematician. He's a scientist. He's a guy that came up with this pattern for recognizing design. His entire thing, if you look at that and you say, yes, it's dependent on something else to make it that way, then you can keep going and go, okay, then it's time to ask the next question. Is this a simple thing or a complex thing? Right? You with me on all that? We're going to illustrate all this here in a minute to kind of help you understand it. The third thing is, he goes, if it just can't exist by itself, if it's contingent on something else, and if it's complex, then he asks this question, is it specified? And what he means by that, is it very specific for a specific purpose type of thing? And if you can answer yes to all three of those questions, then you can say that there's a designer behind it. Now, Brendan and I pulled out some Scrabble tiles this week, and we kind of tried to illustrate this way. So this first question about, is it necessary or is it contingent upon something? We dumped out 100 Scrabble tiles. Does that look like we dumped out 100 Scrabble tiles? We did. There's 100 Scrabble tiles there, and some of them are face up and some of them are face down. So to answer this first question about, could it just happen on its own, or is it dependent upon something else, we are illustrating that by showing it this way. And incidentally, Rob Bowman and Kenneth Boa wrote about using Scrabble tiles in their book, one of their books about compelling reasons, 20 compelling reasons to believe God exists, and we kind of stole that from him. But look at this next picture. Now the Scrabble tiles are face up. Does that show that someone was involved? Probably so. So we go on to the next question. Remember, the next question is about, is it simple or is it complex? So let me just show you. We took those 100 tiles and we just kind of pulled them out of the bag and we lined them all up. So here we go. This is what we actually got. Just all Scrabble tiles, all face up, all that kind of thing. You would look at that and you'd go, if that was just a repeating pattern, then that would be very complex, right? 100 letters in the same order repeated would be very complex. But if it's just random, then it's very simple, right? Are you with me on all that? Well, let me show you something that's complex. Let's show this. Notice here, we took those same tiles and we created a bunch of words out of them. We just started grabbing tiles and creating words. We have teeth, eyes, cake. I like the word cake. Can we just talk about the word cake for a minute? We have Cupid, ox, grin, webs, Joan, quail, port, dune, fry, simmer, win, a bunch of other words that you kind of see on the screen there. Now, notice those tiles are creating words. It's complex, right? It's actually creating things that we can recognize, things that we can read. And it has all the appearance of design, but that doesn't necessarily prove that it has design. Do you know why I'm saying that that doesn't prove design? Because it's gibberish. But let's say those tiles actually spelled something out. 20 tiles right here. This is showing the specified thing when he talks about that. It says Joshua Dykes is our hero. That's what we were able to do with the 20 tiles we had. We don't have a picture of them not spelling that. But 20 tiles spelled Joshua Dykes is our hero. You're in luck. The other one we had was 19 tiles that says, my feet smell like a yak's. So we didn't use that one. But I want you to catch this picture here. If it's just spelling, even if it's complex and just spelling words, doesn't necessarily mean that it's designed. But if it's specified, if you can answer yes to the question, is it contingent on something else creating it? Yes. Is it complex? Yes. Is it specified? It's not just gibberish, but it does something. If you can answer yes to all of those, Dembski would say that this is the proof of design, that you can detect design. Does all that make sense? I want you to grasp this concept here for a minute. Because what Dembski, another guy that we're about to talk about, Michael Behe, he came up with this term called irreducible complexity. And I wasn't even going to mention that term today because we hear that term and we go, boring science. Let me give you an example of what Michael Behe says is an idea of this complex world that we live in. And he simply talks about blood clotting. Think about this, right? You cut your arm, it bleeds. It eventually stops bleeding. Why? Because it clots, right? Because the blood itself has something inside of it that causes it to congeal enough to where it hardens, and it can staunch the flow of blood. It can stop the flow of blood. I have a cat. He loves to scratch me all the time. He's a little jerk, as all cats are, I think, you know. But I married a cat person, so we have a cat. And that little cat, he will take his claws and he will scratch me. And I know for the next 2 to 3 minutes, I can't put my arm on anything or else I'm going to get blood on it. But 5 minutes down the road, it's going to be okay because the blood is congealed and it's there. That's why people who are taking blood thinners, because they have a problem where their blood's congealing too much, so they take blood thinners so that their blood will stay thin and not congeal and they won't die, right? That's why when they get cut, it's such a big deal. Because they could just keep bleeding and bleeding and bleeding and bleeding. Because their blood thinners have messed with their body chemistry in this natural process that we have called blood clotting. But I want you to think about this here. Because what happens with blood clotting is the blood's pumping normally throughout your body and it's clotting at a specific place in just the right distance, right? It's perfectly covering the cut. And all of that is pretty complex. And all of that is based on a numerate number of proteins and all kinds of things that could occur at just the right time. And I want you to think about how complex that process is. Not only does your blood clot, but it knows where to stop clotting. Imagine if you got a cut and it clotted outside and then it continued to work its way back through your body and all of your blood clotted. You would not be sitting here today. This is the type of thing that Anthony Flew looked at and he goes, man, this is complex. This is huge. There's got to be a designer behind all of that. Are you with me on that? All that kind of makes sense? So I'm going to go back for a minute to our passage. Our Psalm 104, verse 24 and 25 passage says, how countless are your works, Lord. In wisdom, you've made them all, and all the earth is full of your creatures. And I want to stop right there. All the earth is full of your creatures. The things that Anthony Flew saw were the incredible complexity in this world that he goes, there's got to be a designer. There has to be someone who created it this way. And I want to talk about some of those creatures, some of those pretty incredible things that God has created that you just kind of go, wow, that's amazing. First example I want to give is called the guillemot bird. You ever heard of them? Yeah, they're weird. They don't live here. You know, they're not in Brownwood. The guillemot bird has a very unusual egg. Here's a picture of a couple of eggs sitting in someone's hands there. Those are really kind of unique eggs. Their colors, incidentally, they're not always green. Guillemot eggs sometimes have different colors and different things. Some of them are brown, but a lot of them are green. But all of them have a shape like this. You kind of catch that shape? You remember the little punching bag you had when you were a kid that was, you know, it was this type of a shape that was wide on the bottom and kind of narrow at the top and you could punch the thing and it would bounce back up, you know, and had all the weight in the bottom? That idea probably came from this little guillemot egg right here, because what happens, these eggs, it's almost like they were designed this way. Imagine that. This egg, if it knocks over, it just spins in a circle. You ever have an egg that got away from you, a chicken egg, and it rolled off the counter, and then all of a sudden you have a mess on your floor? You knock over a Guillemot egg, and it's just going to spin in a circle. You with me on all that? Why is that a big deal? It's a big deal because of where they lay their eggs. Look at this picture. This is where they lay their eggs. They lay their eggs on cliff faces. They are in the midst of rocks. And if their egg gets kicked over, it's just going to roll off and it's going to fall off of the cliff. So what you've got here is you have this incredible design and an egg that just rolls in a circle so it doesn't fall off of a cliff and guillemots get wiped out because their eggs just all rolled off of a cliff. And honestly, I can't think there would be enough time that would pass that natural selection and evolution could produce something like this. Because the very first, if you want to deal with the very first generation of guillemots, all their eggs would have rolled off the cliff and pff, they're done. They're wiped out. You with me on all that? You kind of picture that? Yeah. Now, something, okay, I have never even seen a guillemot. I wonder how they taste because I'm a hunter. You know, I go, I wonder if they taste good, you know. Never seen one, never dealt with them. But you know something we see all the time around here? Honeybees. Right? You want to talk about something more practical, something that we're a little bit more used to. Actually, I'm not going to honeybees yet. I should have looked at my notes. But I want to talk about the bombardier beetle before we get to honeybees. We are going to get to honeybees here in a minute. The bombardier beetle is, I think, one of the most unlikely things to have just evolved by chance. The bombardier beetle is amazing, y'all. This is incredible. Here's what is so special about the bombardier beetle. They have a very, very unusual defense mechanism. So they have a couple of tubes in their tail and in their tail end there filled with two different enzymes, two different chemicals that when they mix together causes an explosion. I'm not kidding. Causes an explosion. They have an exploding Heidi. That's truly what happens here. Now, what happens, there's a third substance, an inhibitor, that prevents any explosion from taking place until the chemicals enter a chamber at its tail. And then at that point, the enzymes are added together and they come together and they cause a little explosion. This little explosion, they have a 212 degree jet that comes out of their hiney and burns anything that's around them, but also can propel them a couple of feet away from whatever's trying to eat them, whether it's a frog or whatever else. Think about this for a minute. Y'all, I'm not making this up. Two different chemicals inside its tail that don't mix together because of a third chemical that's there, and then all of a sudden these things in the tubes just come out, and they create a little mini explosion with 212 degree jet coming out. Do you want to see what that looks like? Here's a little 4 or 5 second video. We could show you what that looks like. Do you kind of see that? You want to play it again? Let's just play it again here for a minute so you can see it. You know, here's the thing I want you to catch for a minute. A bombardier beetle could not just be a random chance. Do you know why? Because there'd be a long trail of attempts with them blown to smithereens because it didn't quite work out this way. This is the wisdom of God that produced the bombardier beetle. And it's amazing, and it's beautiful, and it's incredible. And I can't shoot 212 degree things out of my body like the bombardier beetle can, right? There's so much diversity and so much complexity. And you see here, Lord, in your wisdom, you have made them all, every single one of those creatures. So let's talk about the honeybee. You know what honeybees do that are very unusual? They have bees that kind of go out, and they are finding pollen, and they have to find pollen. Now, a bee that finds pollen will have to go back, and they have to tell the worker bees where the pollen is. So here's what the honeybee actually does. They do what they call a little waggle dance. Now, I want you to picture this here for a minute. Because a honeybee goes back to the hive. They're out there back in the hive. They can't even point and go, y'all go to those flowers right over there because they're inside a hive. It's kind of like they're inside a building here. So the honeybee has developed a little dance that they do. They kind of do a little shimmy. They call it kind of the waggle dance, and they kind of do a little shimmy. And then the bee will go around this way, and then it'll come back and do that little shimmy, and then he goes around the other way. And this, what they're doing is the bee is pointing to the rest of the workers where the pollen is so that they can go get the pollen and they can produce honey and they can do all that pretty amazing thing here. We have a little video. We could show you this if you want to see this. They're going to go ahead and zoom in. You know, that bee right in the middle. See the circle around it. See how he's doing the little waggle. Now he's going to walk around there and he's going to do his little waggle and walk around the other way. He's going to make this little figure eight. Right? Did you kind of see that? Here, they're going to rewind it. So they're showing, mapping out what he's going to do. Then they'll show this to you again. Watch this. They're rewinding the tape. So here you go. This is a little shimmy dance, his little waggle. Walks around that way, does his little shimmy dance, and walks around the other way. Pretty amazing, isn't it? Now, here's the fascinating thing about all of that. When the bee is doing that, he is taking into consideration the wind speed as well to tell the worker bees where to go based on wind getting blown around, because honeybees are like little itty-bitty, right? Pretty impressive for a creature that literally has a brain the size of a millimeter. Pretty amazing, isn't it? Do you know why? Psalm 104, verse 24 says, "In wisdom, you have made them all." Do you know why the honeybee does that? Because God designed the honeybee to do that. And it's incredible. Imagine how natural selection would prove that. Imagine how natural selection could produce that. The first little bee goes, "Let me see, I've got all these worker bees back in the hive. How can I tell them where to go? Maybe if I wag my tail a little bit and, you know, kind of do a little shimmy thing, and maybe I'll just walk in a circle so that they get the direction right, and then I'll shimmy again, I'll walk back around that way." Can you imagine all the other bees sitting around going, "Dude, what's Wes doing?" Everyone's like, "I don't know. Wes is just an idiot. I don't know." You kind of catch that picture, right? Do you know why honeybees do that? Because God has designed them to do that. And it's amazing and it's incredible. But I want to go back to the verse here for a minute, because notice it says, "In wisdom you have made them. All the earth is full of your creatures," right? All the earth is full of your creatures. But notice it goes on from there. And it says, "The earth is full of your creatures." And then we get to verse 25 that says, "Here is the sea, vast and wide." And I want to stop here for a minute. You want to know, even seeing the wisdom of God in the sea and in water and in our oceans, it's pretty amazing to think about. Did you know that there's only one thing that we know of here on earth, only one thing that is lighter as a solid than it is a liquid, right? Think back to like seventh grade science. You learn that things exist in three states, right? Solid, liquid, and gas, right? You take water, it exists as water, it exists as ice, and it exists as vapor, right? Water, liquid, and gas. There's one substance that is heavier as a liquid than it is a solid. Only one, and it's water. You go, "Okay, sure, what's the big deal about that," right? Why does that matter? Only one substance, and it's water. Why does that matter? Well, because if water was heavier as ice, think about what this would mean. All the icebergs on the planet would sink to the bottom of the seabed. Right now, what they do is they're sitting up on top. They get the UV rays, they get the sun, they melt, they actually float down towards the equator, and they continue to melt. But if the reverse was true, and ice was heavier than water, like it is with every other substance on the planet, except for this one, all the ice would sink to the bottom and our oceans would literally freeze from the bottom up. Think about that. And here we have this throwaway line about, "Here's the sea, vast and wide." But yet even that sea shows the wisdom that God has created. We can only exist because ice is lighter than water, so ice floats. Fascinating, isn't it? Notice it goes on and it talks about, "Here's the sea, vast and wide, teeming with creatures beyond number, living things, both large and small." Y'all, we could go on for a long time. I mean, I want you to think about this. Think about the electric eel. Think about the creativity and the design behind an electric eel. An animal that could shoot a 300-volt blast of electricity to stun its prey. That's pretty amazing. All of y'all that wish you could do that to the huggers today, right? Shoot a 300-volt of electricity just to stun your people that are coming in to hug you, and, you know, they're just laying there twitching on the ground or something, right? It's pretty amazing. It's pretty incredible. Another one of those amazing creatures where I kind of go, this is the wisdom of God at work, is the black fly larvae. Now, black flies, we see them flying around, but they lay their eggs in rivers, in fast-moving rivers for the most part. And what happens is those larvae then attach themselves to rocks. We could show you a little video here of what that looks like. These are black fly larvae. They're going to grow up and become larvae. And notice they're attached to rocks. This is actually a slow motion that you're seeing right now as the water is flowing over it. What these larvae do is they attach themselves with the hook, but it turns out they also have a long retractable silken line that stretches out of their mouth. So if they get shoved off of the rock because of the moving water, they can rein themselves back in with this long silken hook if they lose their grip. You capture how amazing and incredible that is? Think about the billions of snowflakes that fall every single year, and every single one of them is different. Because in wisdom, God made it all. The truth is that there is just so much complexity in this world. There's so much complexity even in our DNA. Originally, I wanted to do a sermon on complexity in our world and what it takes for life to exist. But y'all, I've done that twice in two different sermons over the last 5 years because it's one of my favorite things to talk about. And I'm not planning on doing a sermon about it in this series. But it's there. And all of this complexity pointed towards a guy that was the foremost atheist of his day, and made him go, there's got to be a designer, there's got to be a God behind it. So let me ask you this question. Most of us tend not to think about all of this detail, but let me ask you this. What do all these examples that we've shown today tell you about God? Do they tell you that all of this is just random, all of this has just kind of happened? The truth is that they point to a designer, they point to a creator, they point to the God who put it all together in his wisdom and created so much diversity and things in life that just don't make sense any other way than this is what God did. It's amazing and it's incredible. And the God that created all of that, he took your 3.1 billion strands of DNA, your little ladders of DNA, and he made you. Fearfully and wonderfully created you just like you are. Created the black fly larvae. He created honeybees. He created all these amazing things we see. The guillemot birds, the bombardier beetles. Incidentally, I love that name. They have a little explosion, so they're called the bombardier beetles. That's intentional. That's why they call them the bombardier beetles. And the God who created all of that, created you, knows right where you are today, whether you're sitting here in this building or watching at home, and he's right there with you going, hey, I love you so much. And I created you, and you are so important, and you matter so much to me. The God that designed you did that because he loves you, and he wants a relationship with you. And when I look at all these incredible things that God has made, the creatures on land, when I even look at the oceans, when I look at the life that teems inside of those oceans, I cannot help but say, there is a God that exists. So the question is, what are you going to do with that this week? Let's bow in a word of prayer as our praise team is coming back up. And let's pray. Lord, we thank you that you have designed and created this earth in so many remarkable ways. You have done the unbelievable, from giving a beetle the ability to have an explosion, to giving an eel the ability to shoot an electric charge, the complexity we see in this life around us. We pray that that'll move us to look for the evidence, to look for where the truth actually lies, to look and see, is there something to this God thing we hear about? And Lord, if we'll follow the evidence, we know it's always going to lead us back to you, because that's just the way it works. Nothing else can explain this incredible complexity and this incredible diversity. We thank you for life. We thank you for beetles and honeybees and all the incredible things that we see. Most of all, we thank you for creating us and for loving us so much that you were even willing to send Jesus to die on a cross for us, just so we could have a restored relationship with you. Thank you for that. That's amazing. And we could never be worthy of that. Thank you for all of these incredible things that you've created that point us to you. Just help us to be looking for it. For it's your name we pray. Amen.